Call the meeting order. All please rise. Join me in the salute to our flag. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You may be seated. Our clerk will now take the roll call.
Councilmember Watson, present. Councilmember Hanson.
Here.
Councilmember Olson.
Here.
Councilmember Ingram.
Here.
Councilmember Mushler.
Here.
Councilmember Burst.
Here.
Councilmember Goodrich.
Present.
A full slate. Thank you, Council. Okay, next up is the public comment period. This is the time when the audience can come forward to the podium and speak to anything that's not on tonight's agenda. We will get to you. And so if you can come up and you can introduce your name, limit yourself to 3 minutes. We would love to hear from anything that's not on tonight's agenda. Now, on the regular agenda, if you have something to speak during that agenda, just raise your hand or contact me, wave your arms or something. We will get to you. So I would assume we have someone that's already shown enthusiasm for the public comment period. Welcome, welcome.
Actually, first, before I start, I just wanted to extend my condolences. And I spoke to some of the students about the recent tragedy last week. So Saturday night, and they were very receptive. My whole family's military. And Bridget Cantrell, I'm just giving this as an open space.
Can you do it at this sure. at the microphone, then we can record?
Yes. Hi. My name is Cynthia Sue Ripke Cutsigoes. I'm a registered nurse teacher, a master's as a teacher, undergraduate sociologist, and et cetera, et cetera. And I believe in Bridget's work. She's local in the community. So a couple of the students the other night, on Saturday night, I was giving some flowers and candles and things. And, you know, post-traumatic stress for anyone when you have a stressful situation doesn't have to be relegated to all our military. So I'm just leaving this for y'all, and if you wanted to contact her, I mean, I'm sure she'd be glad to speak to the public or the schools, and some of the boys really kind of picked up on that. So.
Yeah, thank you.
Excuse me. I was down at the Whatcom Council last week to speak about the jail. I have, how can I put this? I also worked in correctional facilities, both in Florida, the Sheriff's Jail in Florida, Gardner Correction in Newtown, in the capacity as a nurse. So that's what I'm going to speak to you, and my undergraduate was sociology. So what I was trying to explain to the council, that I also worked at WOTC, a lower-level women's prison in Newtown, and over five... It sounds ostentatious, over five rehabs, which I'm sorry there are that many. And I know we're talking about rehabs, but I just need to tell you, there are times that I don't see people coming into corrections that that's a bad thing. The recidivism rate for all drug use, even if it's an e-cigarette, is like years, usually very high, 90%, which means they come back and they come back and they come back. But mostly what I'm speaking of is just like I spoke to you about cannabis, the safety for all, and especially the officers. When I worked at Garner in, you know, Connecticut, a very nice, very kind thinking like, well, let's just set it up. People act differently in one-to-one than they do in social groups. So they set it up with a very social model. No bubbles for the officers. I mean, the amount of infection, which is I'm just going to speak really briefly to, you have 42 gangs in Whatcom County. You have 27% of your inmates that aren't even from this area. So I'm just going to say real quick, you are also having an immigrant status with porous pores that are coming in with lots of infections. In Florida alone, we had one nurse for all the infection from TB on out to everything else. And the sad thing, even for the nurses, I mean, when I was doing 7 diabetics at 7 o'clock, knowing their other health histories, from viral hepatitis, this is a recent update, there's all kinds of strains, just like your E. coli, to other things, that I cared about the officers that much. And I'm really going to say that because the officers, nurses, dietitians, laundry, people that are walking in and out of there are as important. It was sad to me when at night sometimes I'd have to irrigate officers' eyes out because bodily products. There are ways when you're angry, we all can get angry, that a person who does not have any anger management may really get back. And there's all kinds of contagious diseases. So when I was speaking to the council, I was always saying, yes, it's very important to have drug and alcohol, but a larger facility, I help in a mission on Sunday nights, and
we'll grant 2 more minutes.
Okay. We have, it's Envision Ministries. I mean, I take people literally back to their tents, and they will tell you, because they're in and out of your jail. And they will say to me, well, Cindy, you got to tell them about when they have fights and the blood, and I went in there and got sicker than when I came out. And so some of these people were going to come with me to speak, but I don't know if that's a good idea or not. I'm just saying that I don't know. It's sad that you do have to have these things in society, but to me, evil just gets in some ways more evil. But you do need to be protective of your officers and everyone in there. I don't know, because I heard something about Slater Row, but I don't know why that's not wasn't ever an option. To me, with all that's going on, if you see and you pay attention to the news, that was like a perfect road. You have security over here, and I'm only just saying that for the sheriff, for the betterment of your community and everybody, I would like to see, hopefully, that you consider, I don't know how, the council said they were going to get together with the towns, that you could get together so that you can be protective of everybody in your communities. I guess that's all I have to say. So, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
And to those of you who think I talk fast, I stand corrected.
And thank you for the flowers.
One more. Welcome, sir.
Good evening. By now, most of you, I think all of you, have gotten a copy of the letter I sent last week regarding the situation with the Lummi Tribe and the I-5 Slater Road improvements. I'm not going to go over all of that. I think basically what I was trying to do was to provide a perspective and some background on the city's relationship with the tribe relative to its fee-to-trust applications in the past, and why the tribe may be a little hesitant to either engage in revenue-sharing options, or they might be a little tough in negotiations right now. I think I explained that in my letter. The main thing that bothers me is I do think that the city is using the I-5 intersection process for leverage to get items from Lummi Nation that they haven't been able to get for the last 2 years in negotiations. I understand the tactic, but I think at this point it's pretty darn dangerous. I don't have all the information in the background, but because of my situation, I do hear a lot of things from both sides of this issue. And what I'm hearing is that if Ferndale doesn't participate in this process, that the process is going to end. The state representatives are going to walk away, and there's a good chance that these intersection improvements may never happen. I don't think the city can allow that to happen. We're talking about $20 million worth of improvements that nobody around here is ever going to find. How long have we been looking for money for the Thornton Road improvements? The fact is that because of politics, and let's just face it, because of politics and with the involvement of Lummi Nation, the state has decided to put these intersection improvements way up on the list. In fact, from what I'm hearing, it's almost assured that the intersection improvements would be funded if both parties agreed to it. And I can see having differences about project design, but I think that those can be remedied. I don't think the proper tactic is to offer to trade all those issues for revenue. The last thing I want to say is that I think that a decade ago or so, the city took a really bold stance in negotiating or in supporting the tribe in its fee-to-trust application. I think the outcome was pretty good. We avoided that all-or-nothing type of situation. We had people crying at the council chambers at the tribe.
2 more minutes.
Because this was so unprecedented, and it was so groundbreaking, and it was so much an indication of how we were going to work together in the future. That didn't occur the second time around. I know there's lots of issues about why it didn't, but bottom line is the city should have taken the same tactic. They should have supported the fee to trust application and entered into negotiations for revenue sharing. That didn't happen. We lost in front of the BIA. That means we really couldn't expect anything out of these deals, but the tribe is continuing to talk. So I would suggest that we engage in this process, that we try everything we can to agree on a design, even if it means having somebody else pick the design, and that we take that $20 million, we develop those improvements, and we start working on some economic development down at Slater and I-5. Because I can guarantee you that the property owners around there would like to see those improvements happen because they know that's the future of business development in that area. So I just wanted to provide some perspective, and I hope that the city will reengage in this process starting on the 24th when I understand there's another meeting, and I hope you don't throw these improvements away because I sure don't want to be dealing with that mess down there for the next 20 years. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else from the audience? Sir? I think you're up next.
I'm up.
Welcome,
well,
sir.
You're right, ma'am. Papa John, I still live at 6072 Malloy. First, tonight I am not going to do my usual puns for obvious reasons, but the tragedy that we all are acutely aware of, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to be serious. And I do want to preface it by something I trust that you all know. I pray for you guys regularly. I care about all of you. I don't care your worldview or your political positions. I do have mine, and you will hear them. But on the other hand, it doesn't keep me from caring about each of you as people, as I do. Right. So with that in mind, I have a couple things, one of which is going to be a repetition, and that is that you can spend your life any way you want, but you can only spend it once. So the question is, on what or whom are you spending your life? This is meant to be food for thought. Second thing is, love, true love, only wants the best for those that true love loves. Only wants the best. And true love only keeps a record of that which is good for the one being loved. Something else, too. Every pearl is simply a victory over irritation. Been irritated? Haven't we all? Every pearl is simply a victory over irritation. Think about that next time you're irritated. Here's one more thing, too. Hate, in any of its forms, is a raging fire that consumes the arsonist. Hate, in any of its form, is a raging fire that consumes the arsonist. One last thing, and this is very direct, very blunt, but I know where I'm going to spend eternity, and my question is of you, do you know? God bless.
Thank you. Anyone else from the audience? Okay. I'll close the public comment period at 6:13:14. I'm going to close the regular council meeting and open up the Transportation Benefit District Board meeting. And you have before you a TB consent, approval of claims runs of May 2015.
Motion to approve.
Moved by Councilperson Goodrich and seconded by Councilperson Birch. We're again on this side of the room as the fast ones. Any further questions or discussion? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed. Motion carries. Okay, at 6:13:54, I'm going to close the TBD meeting and reopen the regular council meeting, and before you is the regular city council consent agenda. Mm-hmm. Councilperson Hansen.
I move we pass the consent agenda.
Sure.
And move and seconded by Councilperson Ingram. Good job, we're spreading the wealth. Further discussion, seeing none. All in favor?
Almost in 3 minutes.
Yeah, good job. You got to type fast. Yes. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion carries 7-0. Great job. Okay, so we have a presentation from the Federal Emergency Management Agency regarding the Community Rating System Program, and our Community Development Director, Yuri Burnett, will make some introductions.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Good evening, Council. Last year, the city embarked on a program or trying to get accreditation for a program that involved just about every of your departments, public works, community development, finance, and the administration. We put in hundreds of hours to get accredited, and finally we were able to show, to demonstrate to FEMA that the city is going above and beyond with our flood insurance program, as well as the way that we handle flooding in our city. And tonight we have Michael Reedy, who's a senior NFIP specialist, and Ken Murphy, who's the regional administrator for FEMA Region 10, here to discuss with us and to present to us their award.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and council members. My name is Ken Murphy, and I'm the regional administrator for FEMA Region 10, which is Oregon, Washington, Alaska, Idaho, and 271 tribal nations. It's always a pleasure to spend time with the community that makes the effort to improve the outcomes for their citizens. Flooding is something that always will happen. We never want it to happen, but when you live in such beautiful country as ours, it's green, and that requires water. And sometimes more water than we care to have. So what the city of Ferndale has done, and thanks to Mr. Burnett and every department, and there's probably hundreds of hands that have touched this project, and it really does make a difference. Sometimes it's hard to see some of the differences. You know, it may be some paperwork, it may be some very minor things, but it all spends time to come to the ultimate goal of protecting the city of Ferndale and reducing the insurance rates to the citizens, which in today's world, if you can reduce the cost of anything, it can't be anything but a positive event. So, Mr. Mayor, I just want to thank you for allowing the departments and Mr. Burnett to take the time to do this. This particular rating, the NFIP, the National Flood Insurance Program, has a rating system that starts out and goes to different levels of insurance savings. And this particular is called a Class 7, and it's a 15% savings on the insurance for the citizens in this area. And that it's a great thing. I hope that we'll be back here doing Class 6 sometime, because it really does make a difference. And fortunately, you know, we haven't had any real severe flooding for a few years, and that allows us to catch our breath and do some things that we're taking time to help our community. So without further ado, Mr. Mayor, I'd like to present you this plaque. I hope you'll find a spot where it will look good. And thank you for your hard work and taking care of the citizens of Ferndale.
Thank you.
Gary, would you turn so?
Yeah.
Oh. There's the photo guy.
Photo guy.
There's one more photo guy.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
Thank
you. And your choice of color ties is just fantastic.
I appreciate that. Thanks to the rest of the council. Have a good evening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Council, I want to go backwards a second here. Sometimes we get it where citizens think we don't listen to them. This process was started when our own interfaith clinic, a great addition to the city who helps poor and disadvantaged people have medical care and dental care in the city, they were the first one. Their landlord contacted us and said, I was seeing it was over a 60% increase in insurance.
It was like 53%.
So we were going to see lots of those in downtown Ferndale, and Yuri grabbed a hold of him and said, I'm working on it. He gave Mr. Bell, the landlord, take, look, we're working on it. We have some positives ahead. We're going to keep working on this. Yuri has a ton of work, and so I know we don't give him enough kudos sometimes, but, hey, a round of applause for Yuri because he did a great job.
Thank you.
That doesn't mean a raise of any kind. Okay. No, great job. That's fantastic. It's a bigger deal than people think, and this will enable the the clinic to stay. Okay, we're going to enter into the discussion about the UGA recommendations, and the star of the show gets to maybe not be the star of the show now. Welcome, Yori.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Good evening again, Council. Yori Burnett, Community Development Director. Originally, every 7 years after the Growth Management Act was adopted in the early 1990s, the city was required to work with Whatcom County, which is a regional planning agency, to determine the appropriate size of its urban growth area, that area that includes the city and is where the city can expand over the next 20 years, and to determine what the estimate for population and employment growth is going to be over the next 20-year period. It's not a target, it's an estimate, and the growth and population projections are intended to allow us to then work backwards from those projections as we come up with our comprehensive plan, which will be adopted by June 30th, 2016. What we're supposed to do is to figure out, could we serve the amount of growth that we expect to see? Or how do we serve it? That becomes a very complex thing that, again, we call the comprehensive plan, but it informs what sorts of transportation projects we're going to have, how we're going to deliver water and sewer, police, just about everything that the city touches is informed in some not-so-small way by the decisions that you will make tonight. Tonight, you are making a recommendation to Whatcom County, which is, again, the regional planning body for the entire Whatcom County. The other seven cities are doing the same thing, more or less at this time, by the end of June. Your Planning Commission has already made a recommendation to you. Your recommendation would then go to the Whatcom County Planning Commission, and their recommendation would then go to the Whatcom County Council. Hopefully, their decision is not appealed to the Growth Management Hearings Board, where it could then all start anew, as we know. What we are looking at right now from you are two decision points, really, and it's going to be in the form of the template that we've attached to your staff report. That template is really your communication to Whatcom County as far as our position. The mayor, Greg, and I will probably be the instruments through which that's conveyed, but it's really that written document that they're going to be looking at. It's the same template that all the other jurisdictions are doing as well. So the two decision points are, what will be the population and employment allocation? What are the numbers by which we expect to grow? And then based on that, or that will be based on, how much land do we think that we need to enable ourselves to plan for the future and to accept that growth? So where to begin? It's really supposed to begin with the population and employment allocations. The multi-jurisdictional resolution that was adopted in 2013 was agreed upon by all the different jurisdictions and Whatcom County, where we all said, let's get the numbers as early as possible in the process so we can start working backwards from them. It was a non-binding resolution, understanding that the individual cities and ultimately the county might decide to go in a different direction. So the allocation to the city of Ferndale for population was expected to be 6,833 people. The allocation for employment was expected to be 2,802 people. 2,802 is 41% of 6,833, and that's an important ratio because that's our current ratio of jobs to population. For every person that we have living there is 0.41 jobs in the city of Ferndale. So we wanted to continue that ratio or not get less than that. We did not want to become more of a bedroom community. And that is where 2,802 comes out. As far as the population is concerned, we're talking 20 years out and we're talking 6,833 people. Neither the Planning Commission nor staff feels that there's any need to amend that ratio or that number. 6,833 is reasonable, we feel. And in fact, our residential portion of our urban growth area, we feel is reasonable as well. The land capacity analysis, which is a spreadsheet that is used by the county and the city planners to determine, can we realistically support this much growth, says that we have slightly too small an urban growth area to support our residential allocation. But because we are increasing in density, most of the subdivisions that you've seen over the last year, and you've seen quite a few, tend to densify. We have new multifamily development coming in. We think that we will, through that gradual densification, we'll be able to support that 6,833 in our residential UGA. So we are not recommending a change to that allocation, 6,833, and we're not recommending a change to the residential urban growth area. So that's residential for now. And I'll be happy to answer any questions you have in just a minute. The employment is a little bit more difficult. How do you measure a job? Do you measure someone that's working 15 hours a week or 19 hours a week, like our new code enforcement officer who's starting tomorrow? Is that a job? Do you measure shift work, where you have a place like Hagen's that's open 24 hours and it has three shifts, whereas a place like Samuel's Furniture only has perhaps one shift or maybe two on the weekends? How do you measure how many jobs can fit on any given area of land when you don't necessarily know precisely what business or what business model is going to go there? How do you also measure jobs that might be in the home right now, jobs that might be in Ferndale but actually working outside of Ferndale, like landscaping or construction jobs? Those are difficult to measure. And while we have to measure it, my perspective, maybe not shared by all planners, is that there's increased fudge factor for them. Also, unlike residential development, where you can see trend lines over time, we know that employment can change fairly dramatically, where all of a sudden a new business comes in and today there are no jobs and tomorrow there are 350 jobs. All of a sudden a business leaves or gets smaller. All of a sudden it's the opposite effect. So it's much more volatile than residential. We also are aware of the fact that the city of Ferndale is interested in economic development, so is the Lummi Nation. Lummi Nation has purchased land, as we have heard, and if successful, there will probably be a significant increase in jobs down south of Slater. Whether or not those jobs are counted in our allocation, and there's substantial debate over whether they should, because the jobs in trust land cannot be allocated by Whatcom County. There are no jobs to allocate to a sovereign government. Whether or not jobs created in Lummi Nation will have an effect on City of Ferndale, on properties that are owned privately, it's tough to say. But this is an unprecedented, as far as we know, circumstance in all of Washington State, where there is, in a relatively small population base, the potential within the urban growth area in the city limits for such a marked change. We also know that even if the Lummi Nation was not involved, that the city of Bellingham has, by most accounts, is running out of space for a lot of the different employment centers that are looking to locate in this area or looking to expand. And you can look at the Pacific Highway where we have Barron Heating, Wilson Furniture, we're going to have LaBelle coming in, we have Hempler's coming in, we're going to have Flax for Life coming in. These are all Bellingham businesses who, as they want to expand, find that for one reason or another they cannot expand in Ferndale. So,
Bellingham.
And they cannot expand in Bellingham. Sorry, they can expand in Ferndale. And part of that is because we do have land area. So the land capacity analysis says that, in fact, we have too much land area, that by just about any measurement, 2,802 employees, we have, even if we do not count, even if we do count some portion of Lummi, we still have about 3,300, capacity for 3,300 jobs. So about 500 more than what would be allocated based on the multi-jurisdictional resolution. I think I've said it at the same time a couple times, so maybe I'll say meanwhile. Meanwhile, as we know that Costco is coming into Bakerview, as we know that nearly between 500,000 and 1 million square feet of retail is coming to Bakerview, the northeast intersection of Slater Road and the Pacific Highway is in the path of progress, that development tends to look at interchanges. This is the next interchange up. We know that that interchange will see a not insignificant increase in traffic as a result of the Costco development. We also know that if the Lummi Nation is successful in their efforts, there's certainly going to be an increase in traffic there on the east side of the interchange, which will most likely warrant additional traffic improvements on that east side as well. We also know that that area, which is approximately 116 acres in our urban reserve, is in the point of view of property owners who have submitted comments to us, not sustainable as a residential area, not sustainable as a small business area, and really is only realistically viable as a commercial area or a place where there can be employment growth. So the Planning Commission and staff have recommended that we expand our urban growth area to that urban growth area reserve. Doesn't mean that we'll annex it, doesn't mean perhaps that we'll annex it for 10 or 15 years, but that we would be allowed to put it in our urban growth area, associate it with our annexation phasing plan, and tell the property owners, the county, and anyone else that wants to read it, that we will only consider annexation when the development in the area or the pressure of traffic in the area warrants it, and we can put some specific triggers through which that can happen. The reason why we're wanting to convert it from reserve to urban growth area now is because I'm talking to you today about an idea. It is June 15th, 2015. This will not be voted on until June 30th, 2016. Pretty rapid turnaround, you know, when you're talking about going through the city and then the county. That's just to get it from urban reserve to urban growth area. Now, let's say that we found out today that the Lummi Nation was successful and that they've secured a major tenant, that they have, in fact, possibly even issued permits today. If we start the process right now, and if we have a year before it's even converted to UGA, probably another 6 months or more before the UGA could then be annexed into the city, we're looking at these areas, the city and the property owners, not being able to act for nearly 2 years after the trigger occurs, compelling growth to start. So that's why we want to convert it into the urban growth area now, to give the city and the property owners the ability to work together to plan for this. All comes back then to the land capacity analysis doesn't right now support this, because 2,802, I can't modify that 2,802 to make it fit. And we are not doing ourselves any service by implying that actually Ferndale only has the capacity for 2,000 employees, when we've already studied in the planned action area the fact that we have capacity for nearly that just on Main Street. We do have the ability to look at what the county has analyzed in its environmental impact statement, where the EIS looks at the bookends of growth. Those bookends range for an allocation for Ferndale's employment from 1,728 employees over the next 20 years, which was the historic rate that Ferndale would expect to see if the trend lines just continued in a straight line, all the way up to 4,171 employees, which is the existing allocation dating back from 2010 or before. It may be that the council would wish to seek an allocation if you do believe that the trend lines will not continue and that Ferndale's employment will start to expand, and if the growth in the Lummi Nation lands is included in the allocations from Whatcom County, it may be appropriate for the council to consider recommending an allocation of 3,739 between that and 4,171. That would be a sufficient allocation to cover the anticipated growth on those properties in Lummi Nation land within the city of Ferndale, as well as the urban growth area reserve. The last thing I'm going to leave you with is to remind you that while I may have made effective or ineffective common sense arguments to go in one direction or another, the Growth Management Hearings Board, if it comes to this, places extremely heavy weight on the land capacity analysis. And if the city were to make 99 common sense arguments that everybody agrees to with, and if there is one technical argument, the land capacity analysis, I could not tell you right now that the city would prevail. So that's going to be something to keep in your mind if you wish to proceed with that and what direction you wish to proceed. What is the argument that would gain favor from the Growth Management Hearings Board?
So discussion only. We've got lots of time. So your thoughts now to give Yori some direction. Councilperson Watson.
I'm curious, when was the last time the land capacity analysis was done?
Before this time? 2011?
Yeah, 2011.
Mm-hmm. So they're looking at 2014 and 15 data, theoretically?
They are looking at, I believe that a lot of the employment data is a little bit older than that, in fact. Partly because it is so unreliable. Do you call people and get data from them? Do you go from InfoUSA? Do you go from the census and other things? So we used Whatcom Council of Governments data as a baseline, and I think that that was 2010 or 2011.
Okay. So I'm just curious, because we're basing everything on this land capacity analysis. I'm just curious where that data comes from, and the fact that it's 5 years old makes me uncomfortable, too.
Councilperson Olson, and then Councilperson Ingram.
In committee, we talked about actually arguing for the removal of the trust property and the federal property. Mm-hmm. And I would support both of those. I mean, we have no control over either one. So that would be my, I would concur and agree with you to remove both, ask them to remove both of those.
And that is the perspective of the city attorney as well. It's not in growth that Whatcom County has a legal authority to allocate, is right. Our belief. But for those that weren't in the committee, it doesn't appear that there has been a case exactly on point to this. So this would be kind of uncharted ground. You can see, as a sovereign government that is not beholden to Growth Management Act laws, which is certain, does that also mean that the county cannot, for other purposes, allocate? And that is yet to be found.
And again, so your recommendation is to just remove the, is it total, it's a little over 10 acres, Greg?
40
total of ours.
Yeah, that's in the city limits.
Yeah. So remove the whole 40. Okay.
And the federal.
Yeah. Okay. Councilperson Ingram?
And the jail land. There's no reason why we would have to keep the jail land in our land allocation when the county now owns it. And we can't do anything with it. And that further improves our chances of getting that northeast quadrant down at Slater into our UGA, because they took this much out of our land allocation for the jail. We need to have that restored in some fashion or another.
But how does the job allocation, I mean, the jobs are still there.
The jobs are still there. I believe that for the jail, the county recognized that it was not growth, so to speak, but more of a transfer, so it zeroes out, but there is a loss of that land. Even if it is factored in, we still don't make the math work, but the fact is that we have, I don't know how many employees, I should know, how many employees are going to be in the jail. Whether that's an efficient use of land or not, is that a question? 50 to 70? That's the sheriff headquarters, which, again, if we were talking about non-governmental jobs, many of the sheriff employees, while they work on the bounty, are actually working outside of the city limits, but their address is the city.
Good suggestion. Councilperson Mutzler?
I think the simplest way, I think I agree with Councilmember Olson. I'm not sure if I'm tracking with Councilmember Ingram. I mean, the jail is a permitted use. On that land, and the old jail will be used, something else will go in there. It's not going to disappear. So I think there is employment improvement for the city of Ferndale because of jail. But I do have a concern about tribal land in that it's 40 acres now, and as a principal, it could be more. It could be another quarter of land. So we need some kind of definitive direction on that. So I'm kind of wondering if we take a position like Councilmember Olson suggesting that it might sort of force a decision by somebody. So, because this is an issue we'll be dealing with as a city for decades. So I don't mind sort of scratching somebody where they might not want to be scratched. And I think maybe that's what Councilmember Olson is saying, that we should take a position that might feel a little aggressive on the tribal land. So future councils can deal with this a little better.
Have we asked, in terms of, say, Quilceta, how do they allocate the job numbers at Quilceta?
My understanding is that what happened there, and perhaps you can correct me if I'm wrong, is that, well, I'll just let you say, because I would just be speculating.
Yeah, for Quilceta, the Quilceta is not in anyone's UGA, and it's not in anyone's city limits. So it is completely, it might as well be, you know, Grant County for all that, for all purposes for Snohomish County. It's just, they just pretend it's not there.
And I think that that's a little bit what Whatcom County initially wanted to do, was to pretend it wasn't there. But then we raised the issue of not the allocations so much as the impacts of growth, where the roads don't have any idea whether or not the traffic was generated by federal property or privately owned property. The impacts are still the same. And so the county has been trying to explore a way to deal with it. One of the most effective ways I think that the county could, or that the council could make their arguments, is within the template. And so when you vote tonight, you might wish to direct staff to make sure that there is a clear emphasis on that decision point, because the Planning Commission and the County Council are going to read it, and we're going to be able to communicate with them. But this is, again, the vehicle through which you're communicating with them officially.
Councilperson Olson and Watson?
I'm not sure what John was saying. I really don't see this as an us and tribal thing. I see this as an us and the county thing. The trust land is a sovereign nation. Whatcom County doesn't get to say what it is. The federal property that I'm referring to is the Border Patrol over there. That's federal property. We don't get to have any say of that. So that would be my argument, is we have no say over either one of those. And with what Greg is saying, I would say that probably supports what we're trying to do.
It'll be interesting, though, I'm city administrator, and eventually someone's going to have to recognize the relationship of those numbers to growth management. They have to be allocated somewhere. Isn't that the thought process?
You would think. But growth management is a Washington State issue, and this is either federal lands or trust lands, and so it's outside of the purview of Washington State.
Right. So, but again, the theory is, the last time we won on every case with the Growth Management Board other than capital facilities plan. How do you update and plan for a capital facilities when you're sending things, or may send things, to what is considered not there?
Yeah.
Well, and that's where the Growth Management Hearings Board has heard cases, and I think Quilceta might be one. I know that around Everett there are others where cities can send services to these trust properties. That's decided on point. There are references in the cases saying, because tribes are not subject to GMA, but it doesn't say anything about the allocation. So, again, if this isn't challenged, the Growth Management Hearings Board still won't consider it. It's whether or not it's challenged, which is yet to be.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how the capital facilities discussion has gone. I'm sure that will continue. Councilperson Watson.
I guess, what do you want us to vote on tonight? Cause I don't know that
no,
I
No, it is a vote. Discussion. No vote, isn't it?
Okay, because you did say
it's a vote. It's a vote tonight.
I have it down as just discussion.
It's a public hearing tonight, yeah.
No, that's a screw-up. Then we only have public hearing on the six-year TIP. This is a public hearing?
And it's been noticed.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a public hearing.
Obviously, I'm totally embarrassed for the agenda that was given to me by those. Okay, so this is a public hearing.
This is a public hearing.
Okay.
So
this is all technical questions, not opinion questions. Sorry. Changes the whole process. Does anyone have a technical question of staff, since it's a public hearing? Okay, seeing none, I don't know if we did a sheet, so we'll have to go to our hand-up thing. So this is a public hearing. A public hearing is a formal opportunity to give testimony to the council for consideration in their decision-making process. Written comments may also be submitted to the city clerk prior to the beginning of the hearing. When the mayor calls your name, proceed as follows. Audience members who have signed up, obviously we didn't do a sheet, so you can just, if you're unable to sign up for the meeting, you'll be given an opportunity to address the council once we've gotten through all the speakers listed on the hearing sheets, or anyone who holds their hands up in order. Each speaker should state his or her name, address the record, and be given 3 minutes to address the council. When a large group of individuals supports the same position on an issue, we encourage the selection of one or two representatives to speak on behalf of the entire group. So, this is a public hearing, so we're invited the audience to come speak. Would anyone like to speak on this subject? One right there. Welcome. Come forward, please. Name and address, if possible.
I'm Lori Irwin. My address is 4958 Pacific Highway. I own a business at this address and have been there. I've owned the property for 20-some years. The business has been there 11. I also speak for my uncle next door, Rick Roddle. He has had a business at his location for over 60 years. We both have been approached to buy buyers to sell our property. They've gone to the county to make sure they could run their business there, and they have been told no. I was approached in December again for the same situation, and the buyer went away because the county said no, they could not run a business there. It is zoned R5. Friday, when I was leaving town, I happened to look over to the left, getting on the freeway, and the people that had talked to me in December about buying my place have bought a place a little closer to Bellingham because they are able to run a business there. So, where I am is not a place to live. The noise is prohibitive for living there. It's terrible. You can't sit outside and have a conversation. There's just a lot of negatives about it. But anyway, I would like to see this go forward because eventually my uncle and I both want to retire, and so does John Wilson next door to me. And if we can't sell our property for a business, I'm not sure if that property is just going to be worthless. But it wouldn't be beyond me to go to the natives and sell my property to them.
Questions for this guest? Councilperson Mutchler?
I have a question for Director Barnett, but did he disappear?
Oh, there. Okay, so this guest can sit down?
It has to do with this guest.
Oh, okay. Would you like her to stay? Or?
Have a seat, Mark. You worked for the county, right, at one time?
I
didn't know you back then. So I know where she lives, mm-hmm. and she's right on Interstate 5. And, common sense says it's not very residential there. And I'm just, what is the process? Like, I know the process is in Ferndale to take a piece of raw land that's in your jurisdiction and say, I want to rezone it. It might cost some money, but it can be done. Are there avenues for her to have that change? I'm just curious. Cause
I
want to
hear your answer.
With the county, because this just seems like a no-brainer.
I believe it would be very challenging because we are always, remember, we have the two maps. We have the zoning map behind you there, and then we have the comprehensive plan map. The county's zoning map says that it's rural, one unit per 5 acres, one residential unit per 5 acres, and it allows an administrative approval home occupation that cannot exceed 1,248 square feet.
Got it.
The underlying comp plan designation is likely something similar to rural or low density residential.
So the county comp plan has this interstate racing through the county. It doesn't make a distinction of land at that point.
That's correct.
Thank you.
And it might be that this is an area that hasn't been looked at since GMA went through. Since it's in the urban reserve, I don't believe that the county is that interested in changing the zoning because it's supposed to preserve where it is until it comes into the urban growth area. So it is very much in limbo.
Thank you for the limbo.
And because from memory, a lot of people don't remember, we didn't even really discuss urban reserve until the very last minute of the last comprehensive process.
That is true. As the various cities, as part of the last process, which was ordered by a court, we're kind of in the last stages and it was recognized that there were going to need to be very significant reductions to the urban growth area. The county planning director at the time, I think, is a compromise between the city saying we are losing what we've been planning for and property owners saying we expected to somehow at some point become part of the city, came up with the concept of urban reserves or urban growth area reserves, which had been used in some other counties. And the idea there was, well, these areas are next. After the urban growth area is developed or when there are is the compelling need to include it in the urban growth area, that can be included in there. However, since it happened so late in the process, I think that the cities are of the opinion, A, that we never really liked it. It's one of those that might have gotten approved, but no one really liked it. And B, the process through which it would change from the urban reserve to the urban growth area, while it does have some criteria, a lot of the criteria remains political, where it could well be that when the city or the property owners come and say, we would like to change this land from urban reserve to urban growth area, I believe that there's a potential for the county council that's sitting to say, for more retail, after Lummi has developed with their retail, we don't really think that Whatcom County needs more retail. No. There's that concern that that political decision could be made even if the city does everything that it needs to. If that's the case, I'm not sure, but that's the fear.
Quick follow-up. So the businesses, and there are quite a few of them to the north of these properties, I think there's even a plumbing business. Those were annexed first to the city before those became the site, the Wilson, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, a long time ago.
They weren't businesses in the county. They were city businesses.
I believe that's true, General.
Correct.
Thank you.
That's helpful.
Thank you for that explanation, because it's something that a lot of people don't remember. It came at the last minute, and when it was first brought up, it was like, well, I remember we asked, well, how do you get out of urban reserve? And the question was, well, we'll just tell you that later. It was a poor way to plan. Anyone from the audience would like to speak forward on this subject? Anyone else? No? Okay, we opened the public hearing at 6:45:10, and we're going to close it at 6:51:58, and I think the council is looking for direction on what they would like to do.
Yes.
Or what you would like them to do.
What I would like to
do. Give us a lot of variables.
I did. Let me first say also that in addition to Mr. Irwin's letter, there were other letters attached to your documents or to your staff report. The folks I spoke to, and I think I spoke to most of the owners of most of the land in that area, are supportive of this. Interestingly, the Lummi Nation has also submitted a letter in support of this. We did notice this to all of the property owners in the area. We are not required to have a public hearing. This is an advisory vote, so the fact that we did do one is great, but it's not required. What my recommendation would be to the City Council, and I am assuming that you agree with the no change to the urban growth area for residential, and that you are supportive of an expansion of approximately 116 acres to expand into that Slater area. What I would recommend to you is to modify the employment allocation for the city of Ferndale in an amount that is sufficient to include both the Slater area and, at your choice, the Lummi Nation area.
Well, you don't give us a choice. Really.
All right. This is sounding like an unbelievably long motion.
Okay, how about this? Recommend adoption of the template attached as Exhibit 1, modifying the employment allocation from 2,802 to 4,000, and recognizing that the extreme uncertainty at the Slater Road area compels a higher allocation.
Can I say so moved?
Second.
Sorry.
Let's just give a second. Clerk, have you got that? That works. So if Kathy says so moved, we're okay.
I think we seconded it.
And it was so moved by Councilor Watson and seconded by Councilperson Hansen, and Councilperson Olson has comments.
Does that address our request to have the trust land and the federal land removed?
It would, because as directed...
I didn't hear anything.
Because of the 4,000 number.
Because the 4,000 would be sufficient to handle it if it was determined that they still needed to. We would not be harmed if they did decide to include it, and I think that's the direction county wants to go. If they decided to exclude it, which is what our direction would be, and hopefully what their attorneys would agree with, we are still protected. I believe this is the safest avenue for us to go and the most legally defensible avenue for us to go at this time.
Okay. Further questions or discussion? None? Okay. All ready to vote. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries 7-0.
Thank you,
Mr. Thank Burnett. Okay, next up, this is a discussion about the newly named Pioneer Pavilion Community Center. The sign is up today. And this is one, Greg first did a great job as a delegator, and he delegated this right to me because he didn't want to deal with it. And it's a program called Toddler Time, and they bring young people in. It used to be at our library. It outgrew our library. It's a large program. It's every Wednesday. They entertain young children from 11 to 12, but they want to occupy it from 10 to 1 to make sure it's clean and parents hang around and talk more. And it's a great program, I guess, and it's been outstanding, and it's a good thing. But it would be every Wednesday. They want to start in September. They kind of go through school at our times, and it's this program has no fundraising ability at all. They operate with no budget. You know, their materials are donated, their time is donated, their people are their one employee is through a grant. So it would be a free rental for that period. So I think it's good for discussion. They didn't need an answer right away because they don't go till September. So Councilperson Ingram is first.
Well, having been to Toddler Time on more than one occasion and read there, enjoyed the screaming children, my only question is, will they have the bathrooms open?
By September? Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, I would totally support it. I just it's going to be loud. And we might get some flack back from our newly relocated visitor center people, but I can't think of anything better to use a community center for than a community-wide program for the kids. I just think it's fabulous.
Okay. Councilor Mutchler, Bursch, and then we'll go to Councilor Olson.
So I have a public giftings question about this. And I just in a similar group call my church. They wanted to rent part during the week. We had the space. I'd love to do it, but we checked with the state. Because we are property exempt, we can't rent out space unless it's religious.
I would ask our public works director, city minister, that question.
The issue with the gifting of public funds is that if you give something to everyone, it's not a gift. But in this case, we would need to two things. One is, if we were seeing any Toddler Time from any organization at any time can use the pavilion, then that would not be a gift of public funds.
Exactly.
So conversely, saying this group at this time probably could be, except the Constitution of the state says that it's not a gift of public funds if it's for, this is inarticulate wording, but it's in the Constitution, the poor or the infirmed. I don't know if this Toddler Time is reflective of low or moderate income individuals, or whether it's pretty much open to all.
So Greg, where I'm going, this other group sounds similar. They hear about this. Oh, we like that same thing.
Right.
I'm just
That's the difference.
I'm not against them, obviously. But
oh, and that's what's hard.
The public gifting.
Many times there are worthy groups that you want to help. But you have to say to yourself, "Is will we be willing to help every group, worthy or not, in your own minds, under a similar circumstance?" So, if it would be difficult if they paid no rent, because then we would be saying to the public, anyone who wants to use it for any reason, and just use it.
I'll refer back to Councilperson Ingram, but I think he would probably agree. I don't think this is a low-income program. I think this is an open-to-the-public program.
Right.
It is a program that is open to the public. My suggestion would be it was a program that was originally, and I'm kind of making an assumption here, which is always a bad thing, but that it may still be a program that is totally sponsored by the Ferndale Library. Because it was a library program. They just outgrew the library.
It was the Watkins County Library System.
And so my suggestion would be that if we wish to allow them to do toddler time at the pavilion, we should be able to go to the Watkins County Library District and say, here's the rental. And it might be $100 for a year for all I care, but here's the rental. This is what you pay, and you can use it. Because, well, toddler time's not funded by anybody, the library is, unless the library program.
Yeah, and intergovernmentally, there's...
I know, Greg, that before your time, the city rented the Pioneer Pavilion to the Boys and Girls Club mm-hmm. for $1 per year, which I dispute if they ever paid it. Okay. Councilperson Birch?
Have you found out what the occupancy is for the pavilion, sitting and standing?
Yeah, it's 653.
That's standing, sitting, it's about 258.
Okay,
their peak is about 60 young children
and
this
would
adults.
Be weekly, every Wednesday, weekly?
Yes.
What about the chamber wanting to conduct their monthly luncheon there?
They never will. They get too big. They get too good a deal for salaries.
But if they wanted to, we're cutting them out.
They'd have to pick a different day.
Totally.
Certainly a valid point. You know, I thought of that too. Certainly a valid point. Councilperson Hansen and Councilperson Olson.
It's sort of like speaking against motherhood and apple pie and all that kind of stuff. But I'm going to do it anyway. No, not against toddler time. What I'm going to remind everyone is that when we set the rental rates, one of the suggestions was that we establish a process by which nonprofits may use the facility at a reduced and or free rate. We have yet to do that. So this is premature in my estimation. I don't think we should now single out an individual group, no matter how good it is, and say, here, you get it free. But down the road, we may change our mind about other groups that might want to use it that are legitimate nonprofits that are just as viable as toddler time. I think we have to tread very lightly at this point in time and make sure we have our ducks in a row before we do this. Now, it may be that we put our ducks in a row and they fit the criteria that has been established at that point and they will get the facility for $1 a year. That may be the case, and I would support that, provided it's under some sort of an umbrella, not just pick one out of the air, because I've got two or three nonprofits that would like to use it right now.
Good point. Very good point. Councilperson Olson?
And why are they not at the library?
Oh, outgrew 60 young children in there, I guess, is just, you know, overwhelming.
Even with a new big room, it's just too much. It's gotten too big. It's gotten too popular. It's held at the Boys and Girls Club right now?
It's held at the Boys and Girls Club. And for some reason, they've decided they didn't like that idea. I think Mel has the great idea is, and Riley is trying to put together a stakeholders meeting with council, and we probably need to bump that up as quick as possible, because we are, as it progresses, do you want to give us because it's part of the discussion, a little diversion on the construction project there?
It is 99% done. In fact, last week they went through their punch list, and the punch list is things like putting on a plate cover here and buffing out a scratch there. I mean, it is pretty much done. What's happening next is that the Chamber of Commerce is going to be coordinating the refinishing of the floor. But the bathrooms are put back together. We're talking with the issue is that once you award the contract to the contractor, they own the building. It's their building. And you don't get it back until you say to them, you're done, your responsibilities are over. So while we could probably use the bathrooms today it would be difficult because then the contractor has legal responsibility, but yet we're letting him use it, so it's kind of nebulous. Be that as it may, I would say probably in the next week or two, probably in the next week, Roosevelt Hunkoop will be completely off-site, completely gone. The chamber will be coordinating and starting the refinishing. So we're still thinking about an early July opening date, if you will, for use of the facility.
Councilor Watson?
I would like to do something fairly soon, though, with the nonprofits, because I also have several nonprofits that are very interested in using it. And so by the end of July, perhaps? Can we set a date for it?
Well, I'd almost want to be before July, and here's why. And it's an advantage. You have to look in terms of marketing. It would be very advantageous in our biggest festival during the Week of Old Settlers. You have lots of people there that we open those doors. People can walk in, and I visualize like an A-board. Here's the rental rates for this. Here's what you have to do, because you're going to have hundreds of people come through there. And I think we need to kind of know where we are before the last week of July for Old Settlers.
So we have a month then, mid-July?
Yeah. So, you know, there's no problem at all just putting pressure on Riley. We don't really care.
I don't care. I'll put pressure.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. So next up is the actual only public hearing I had listed on the 6-year transportation improvement plan, formerly called the TIP. Oh, there are changes?
Slightly.
Okay.
By state law to adopt a 6-year transportation improvement plan. Basically, what the 6-year plan is kind of our Dear Santa list of items that need to be improved within the city's road system. In order to be eligible for either state TIB funding or federal funding, projects need to be listed on the 6-year TIP. We discussed this list in Council Committee and the Public Works Committee. And basically, the list is pretty much the same as last year. There was two suggestions as far as an addition. The one suggestion for an addition is listed as number 14 on the list, is the Church and Thornton Road intersection improvements, which would basically dig out the intersection, improve the ADA ramps on all four corners, and improve that. There was a second addition to the plan, which I wrote up at the committee, for those of you who were at the committee, and then I took it off because it's actually encompassed in the pavement rehabilitation program. We had discussed placing Portal Way from Enterprise Road to the northern city limits on the list. That's already included somewhat in our transportation benefit district list. The TBD list, I've talked about this before, we need to update that. Currently, the TBD list lists that project from Enterprise Road to Brown Road, so the TBD list update would then include and extend that to the northern city limits, so hopefully that makes sense. Basically, the differences on this draft versus the one that was provided as part of the council packet that's available on the website. It's very minor. All the projects are listed. None of those have changed. They're all still there. There are updates, however, to some of the cost estimates. I didn't have the cost estimate available at the time that the council packet was published for the Church and Thornton Road intersection, so we went ahead and we updated the cost estimate for that. You'll see that, as I said, on number 14. Some of the projects, because we were forwarding an older list, had been forwarded, there were some items that had been submitted for either state or federal grants that were not successful, and so we updated that information because those were listed as going forward for consideration under the Transportation Improvement Board. I updated that information, and then some of the phase information, for example, the Washington Pedestrian and Bicycle Safety Improvements, that's number 11. The city was successful, and we received $280,000 from the Transportation Improvement Board, so we updated phase start dates reflecting the fact that we were successful in getting some grant money, and I think Safe Routes to School were on the list for that, and we're hoping that the legislature is going to kick that money loose here very soon. So that's the information I had. I don't know if anybody has any questions.
Do you want to put up the...
Yeah, we've got the amazing sticky boards as well.
Very high tech. Very high
tech. And if, you know,
I just have one links. Quick question. Real quick, Katie.
Yes.
Number one, on your pavement rehabilitation program, Main Street, I-5 ramps to Barrett Road, we're not encroaching on WashDOT's right away there, are we?
No.
Okay.
Are these in any particular order?
No.
No, that was discussed actually at council committee, and I mean it's at the council's discretion whether or not you choose to rank them in numerical order. So long as they're listed on the six-year plan, the granting agencies, you know, through the Fed and the state, they don't, as long as they're there, they don't really care how that's listed.
Councilor Sanger?
I move to approve the six-year plan.
Oh, it's a public hearing.
Oh, it's a public hearing.
Yeah, sorry.
That's right.
So any other...
Where's the other one was wrong?
Any other... Well, it was confusing because we missed some of them. any other technical questions of staff?
Wait, was you thought Greg?
Blame Greg?
No,
well, he wasn't even here.
Neither was I.
Okay. Oh, there you go. Well, obviously it's all Riley's fault. Okay, so we're done with technical questions. We can go to the public hearing at 7:11:33. Would anyone like to come speak in forward about the traffic improvement plan, six-year TIP? It's very exciting, I know. Yeah, it is very important.
Mind-boggling.
Okay. Are we prepared to just, I still think this is important, are we prepared to just give the public a little bit of glimmer after this and talk about the signalization?
Oh, sure.
Okay. So no one wants to come forward and speak on the TIP, so we'll close the public hearing at 7:12:08. And I want Greg to talk about this because before you vote on it, I still think it's important that the public knows what we're doing on signalization. So we'll go to the acting public works director.
Yeah, week before last, Bo and I actually had a chance to go into Bellingham to their traffic control center and took a lot of notes. I'm putting together a little report, and my hope is to actually have a study session or at least possibly even a session during our next council meeting to go over what we learned about the different state of the art when it comes to traffic control. But suffice it to say that, as comes to no surprise, we don't have the most robust system in the world, but we can. It's not unbelievably expensive, nor is it unbelievably technically difficult for us to upgrade our system. When you go to the Bellingham Center, it looks just like as you would expect if you were in like New York City or Denver. You got a bank of all these cameras from all around the city, and it really looked impressive until you realize that three or four of the screens were of the same image, but they still wanted to fill every screen, so they probably just turned them all on. But be that as it may, the most important thing is they start off by saying that we don't have a button, that we being the traffic control folks in Bellingham, they don't have a button that they can push that turns a light green. They don't have a button that they can push that turns a light red if they see problems. They have to change the parameters in the system, which then changes the cycling. But they can't manually hardwire this light is green now, and then when they take their finger off the button, it turns red. That's a fallacy. It's a control, but it's not maybe not command and control.
But the buses can.
The buses can, and the police can, and the fire can by hitting their little whatever the thing's called, that the little device that's on the mast of the thing. But in the control center, what they can do is everything, it's kind of live insofar as you see the intersections, and there's counters as far as how long the light is. It's counting 1, 2, 3, maybe up to 30 or 40 or 60 seconds, and that's what they can play around with. And they can do that sitting in their office. Now, that is the problem we have here, is that they can't do it sitting in their office. If they want to change the timing of the lights here in Ferndale, they have to drive to Walgreens. There's a cabinet there. And they open it up, and they start changing some of the things, and then they stand around for a while to see if that helps. Or they wait a day or two and ask people, well, is it any better, is it any worse? It's kind of a clunky manual system. They have to drive out here, drive back. What they would love to do, and what we're putting together some specifications for, is to change that. We have, by installing probably 2 or 3 cameras, and getting DOT to let us put a brand new controller in their box that's up right next to Wiku at the intersection there. There's some cabinets there. And by boosting our microwave signal, they will be able to control from Bellingham our lights throughout the whole corridor. Again, no go green button, but they can adjust it and then sit there and watch the cameras.
You mean all the way to 4th Avenue, right?
All the way to 4th. All the way to 4th. So there's like any industry, there's a lot of terms, and there's a lot of they have their own language about these kind of things, and that's what I'm going to be writing up. The guy from Bellingham is going to be putting together some specifications for us, should we want to upgrade this equipment. His thoughts, back of the napkin, probably for $50,000 or $75,000, we could drastically change the dynamic ability for them to manage our lights from Bellingham rather than coming out here and opening up a cabinet and starting to change the settings. So it's something that can be done. They agreed that the roundabouts, of course, make their job somewhat useless because there's no way you manage a roundabout. It works where because there are no lights. But I think it's not as difficult. I came away understanding that a couple things. One is it won't be as difficult to change it as I thought it was going to be. It's not going to be as expensive as I thought it was going to be to change it. But there still are going to be issues. And they kept hitting this point that when someone pushes the crosswalk button, that changes all the timings, because then the computer realizes that it has to give time for, you know, lights to stay red or what have you. And then there is also a clearing time when the pedestrians theoretically have time to clear it. And so it's hard because you can't have one cycle that is uninterruptible, because you do have not only pedestrians hitting the crosswalk button, but you also have the issue of whether you want the main line or the side lines, feeder streets, to have priority. And once the cars go over those magnetic sensors embedded in the asphalt, that then starts the clock going. So
can't they just get rid of the buttons and just have a time that so it just comes on? You walk when it tells you to walk, instead of having buttons that you push.
Yeah, the one of the, they say in bigger cities, that's kind of the way it works.
Because that's not Seattle.
Right.
Bellingham does it.
Yeah, because you have this anticipated, somewhat constant flow of pedestrians. He says you can do that, but he says there's going to be times of the day when there are no pedestrians, and therefore you're unnecessarily holding back traffic.
But are you, though? Because if it's red, then you know that you can cross a certain way, whether it says white person is walking or not. I mean, so I don't see. It's going to turn red
I got the impression that the cycles are a little longer. The red-green cycles are a little longer when the pedestrian interrupts it to do that. But this is, I think, interestingly enough, that my hope is that when I write this up, I want to send it to this guy to see if it makes sense. And I may even ask him to come here, because he appreciates that all of you are interested in this, and he seemed to have a very good grasp on it, and there never really does seem to be an end of questions of what if we did this and what if we did that. And I think it would be illuminating to hear from him as far as what improvements we can do, and maybe also to temper our expectations that unless we're willing for the trade-off, if we want the lights on Main Street to be green from 6 in the morning to 8 in the morning, then that means the side roads are going to be locked down. So there's always a trade-off between clearing the main line and allowing, but he also mentioned that people learn. They learn, perhaps, that in the morning you don't try to get to Main Street on 2nd, you go down to 4th, because maybe that's the way we've programmed it and that's the way we've educated our folks. So part of it is also an education, so you can set folks' expectations so when they come home at night, they can expect a certain type of signals, and when they leave in the morning. But it's very interesting. There's no one size fits all, but we can update our system relatively inexpensively, and I think we'll have a much more manageable system to the extent that they are willing to manage it from afar. One last thing is, you can imagine how difficult it can be for them to leave their center and get in the car and drive out here and open up the cabinet and tick with that. Well, they actually, on their own, updated the controller to not the best, but the second best, because, honestly, they thought that it was worth their time and effort to not have to come out here as often. So they're able to actually do a little bit more dynamic programming than they used to be able to, pretty much unbeknownst to us.
Okay, Councilperson Ingram, and then Councilperson Goodrich.
Well, at committee level, there were some very good suggestions to encourage people to use 4th Avenue rather than 2nd Avenue to access Main Street. The stop sign at 4th Avenue on Vista is one of them. But I'd love to have that gentleman come here, because I'd like to bounce off him what I've been saying for years. You're not going to have any traffic flow on Main Street that's viable and consistent and accurate until you close that left turn lane onto Hovander. If you don't do that and you get a couple of semis in there and they're trying to turn left across that traffic, and they do it all the time, your whole system is in a scrap heap because there's absolutely no way anybody can move. So we ignored Transpo when they told us that 6 years ago, so we might as well listen. Let him tell us that that's what we need to do so we can ignore him.
That's Professor Goodrich.
I'm just, looking at the signals, and Councilmember Ingram took a little bit of my thunder, my 4th Street and Vista stop signs. What would it take to get somebody to really look at the signals from the point of view of putting the stop signs there at Vista to try to encourage people to go down the 4th, and then at 3rd and 2nd and 1st, taking the no left turn, from 4 to 6 p.m.? Because, a lot of that is triggered by those folks. We have the short distances between 1st, 2nd, and 2nd and 3rd, so if they do try to make a left turn on the Main Street, there's a lot of times there's no place for them to go. I haven't seen a traffic study that's looked at those type of options. And if we're talking about changing our signalization and timing, then I would like to see what effect those things would have on the traffic.
Good suggestions. So I knew you'd want to hear about this, so that's great. So before you have...
Now I will move to approve the 6-year transportation.
I'll second.
Thank you. Any further discussion? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Good job. Okay, ordinance for council action, traffic impact fee amendment.
Good evening again, City Council. Due to oversight on the part of your community development director, modifications that were required to be made in 2000 over the last couple of years to bring the traffic impact fees for residential development up to a par with the impact fees for the rest of development didn't occur. If you recall, after we initiated the planned action, it resulted in significantly higher traffic impact fees all across the board. Council, as we were emerging from the recession, felt that it was inadvisable to increase residential traffic impact fees to the same level as the rest of development, so kept those fees lower with the expectation that they would increase by approximately 3% over the next couple of years before reaching a par in 2015. Because that did not occur, we now charge approximately $450 less per single family lot than we would otherwise. Because of the way our system works, where half of it's paid by the developer and half is paid by the with the building permit, that equates to approximately $250 per building permit. In addition, we had anticipated that we would modify our traffic impact fees this year. Every odd year we're supposed to. As a second part of the ordinance, we are requesting from council the ability to change Ferndale Municipal Code 15.44 to allow us to wait until 2016 when we're redoing the comprehensive plan anyway, and we'll have a better idea of what the projects will be. So there are two parts to this. One of them, staff is clear that we want to wait until 2016 to reassess traffic impact fees in general. The other one, we are looking for your direction by way of your approval of the ordinance, either to increase the residential impact fees up to 100% of what they were supposed to be by August 1st of this year, or as an alternative in your staff report and as requested by the committee, to increase the fees over time, such as within the next 2 years, they would increase by 3% each year. Happy to answer any questions. No hearing is required.
Correct. Councilperson Goodrich?
I'm not in favor of the one-time, hit type of thing. We kind of told developers we were going to do the 3%. I like to give them that option now of going that route. So I'd like to make a motion that we go with that route to bring it up to a full percentage and leave the rest of it till next year.
Yes?
Can I just clarify? Would that
no,
be?
Because I don't have a second, so there's no discussion.
I wasn't sure of the motion. I was ready to make it
I'm
second.
I'm not going
to
second the motion because I'm not clear about the motion.
Yeah, I wasn't quite sure.
Okay, do you want to restate your motion?
My motion would be that we do not do the one-time hit to the full 100%, but we do it as presented as over the two-year period of time
a phase
to bring it up.
That I can say. Okay, oh, now you can have a discussion.
He clarified, I think that this is similar to the alternative we describe on page 73.
Great. Okay, further discussion from council?
When does it start?
Is that a hand up, John? Or
no.
I think you were the first hand up. Councilperson Mutchler?
I noticed the BIA is here. I don't know if she's here because of this, but you just wanted to see us? Okay. Okay. It seemed like your topic. I wanted to make sure you were recognized.
I appreciate that you're inching your way up into the Bellingham fee, which, of course, you want me to actually touch off for a second?
Yes, we welcome you.
Well,
and I believe I think the council should know. I think it's interesting. Didn't the legislature pass the BIA-led proposal that all impact fees are paid on certificate of occupancy now?
Right. I'm Linda Twitchell with the Building Industry Association of Whatcom County. The legislature approved this year a mandatory impact fee deferral program, which means every municipality or school district that charges them will have to allow people to pay the fees basically when the property is ready to be sold, occupancy. And that, the Bellingham, for instance, is just getting started and doesn't expect to be done with that for another year. There's enabling ordinances and things you got to do. But that is something that the legislature did approve. Otherwise, our comments are we appreciate Ferndale's openness to business in general and your ability to help with single-family housing. We are still convinced from what we see in terms of market research nationally from the National Association of Home Builders and the realtors who are doing research trying to show their members what you might build if you want to build something people want. 76 or better percent of Americans want single-family homes. So it's in Whatcom County, it's nice to have a city where there may be space and the ability to do that. You are definitely inching into the higher impact fee area with the transportation fees. You've now got a transportation fee that's almost double Bellingham's. Bellingham still beats the heck out of you with a $4,808 parks fee, but this is something that we hope will be considered as time goes on, because yes, developers pay this, but in fact what happens is the home buyer pays it. It affects affordability, and it affects the middle class ability to buy homes in Whatcom County, as we tend to drive fees upwards. So just a request that you keep that in mind as you make decisions.
Thank you. Any questions for this guest?
Just a comment. I'm sure you know, Linda, that we have to pay for the street. I mean, they do have to get fixed. So yeah. A long process goes into this to come up with those fees. Yeah. So I also want to thank you for, you wrote a great op-ed that was very huge, and kudos to Ferndale and the density.
Oh,
where did he go? There he is. So that was really appreciated. I think he still has it posted on his wall in his office. So you can sign it now.
Do an autograph version, yes. Right?
Thanks, Linda. Councilperson Olson.
I'm not going to support this because we screwed up. We didn't charge it. As Brent said, we're going to give developers more time. They knew it was coming. They didn't bother to stand up and say, hey, you guys forgot to increase the fees. Everybody just kept their mouths shut and took the money. So how much money is it that we probably lost out on?
If you figure...
How about substantial?
Not substantial.
Yeah. So here we are going to give away more money and not at least get us whole by August 1st, which we could do tonight. So for that reason, anything short of not making us whole by August 1st, I'm not going to support.
Okay. Further discussion, I'll go to Councilperson Watson and then our finance director.
I'm probably going to reluctantly support it, just because I don't like just suddenly raising it up this high for builders. It's only going to be 1 year that it'll be the middle.
We don't know that yet.
What do you mean we don't? It says 2016.
But we don't know what we're going to be at.
Because of the CCI?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. A question, though, so this is going to start happening in even years. And that's just permanent. It'll be 2016, 2018.
That would be the expectation, and that helps because it used to be that we did the comprehensive plan even years, and it's now been able to switch.
So this syncs them up as well.
That's the expectation.
And can you speak to Councilmember Olson's concern about the CCI changing? Because if we do just the partial right now, we're looking at just raising it up 50% instead of 100. If the CCI is different next year, we theoretically could just not reach the 100% in 2016.
The council, knowing in 2016 what the circumstances are, can change the ordinance based on what they believe is appropriate. If we waited, the expectation would be that by 2017 it will equal 100% of the full impact fee, which would imply then that 2017 would be the catch-up. Maybe we're not complete in 2016. Maybe we need to increase it by 5% in 2017. But 2017, the goal is 100%.
So not next year. It could be 2017.
I'm sorry. That would be in accordance with Council Member Goodrich's proposal. With the other proposal, they would just be locked in. They'd be locked in together, where the impact fee for the rest of development is exactly the same as for residential per trip.
Councilperson Olson, did that answer your question? Or?
No, to me it looks like it's making it worse. We've already not collected it for, what, 2 years, 3 years?
3 years.
3 years. And now we're adding two more years, so that's 5 years to get where we should be.
Right now.
And I thought we were all about development.
Our finance director is first, and then our city administrator, public works director.
Thank you, Mayor. Just briefly, I wholeheartedly agree with Councilmember Olson. This was in our code. We forgot to increase the prices. We need to do it, in my opinion, now. And maybe you do it August 1st, September 1st, or October 1st, but I think you need to bring it up for residential right now. It'll give those that are maybe just waiting, they can get in by October 1st at the lower prices.
Okay.
So it does say August 1st, which you've given us.
So you could bump that date, as the treasurer says. Okay. Our city administrator?
Observation and then a question. You know, we are talking, if we were to increase it right away, it would be $450 per home, per new home. Now, this is residential. How does it work for commercial and industrial factories?
Not at all this year. That would be the second part of the equation where we would wait until we have the 2016 plans before us, and then we'd be able to say, we're looking at a $100 million transportation program. We're going to change the fee for everything, including residential, to $2,000 a trip or to $2,500 a trip.
I guess my question is, right now the residential is tied to the CCI.
It's all tied to the CCI.
Oh, and that's what I wanted to clarify, that not when the CCI changes, that changes not only residential impact fees, but commercial and industrial and manufacturing.
Right now, in fact, the residential is not tied to the CCI. It is supposed to slowly catch up using a different direction with the other ones.
Councilperson Olson, Councilperson Hansen, then Olson.
What happens to the guy that's already come in and paid half? If this changes, the half is when the plat is developed, the other half is when the building permit is cut. So any building permit that comes after would pay half, but the upper half.
They would pay half of the amount, half of the fee at the time that they pay it.
So they're
grandfathered. They have already paid.
They're not.
Let's say that the first guy paid, it was a $1,000 fee. He paid half of it, so $500.
Yep.
Now the fee is $1,500. Half of that would be $750. He does not need to make up the difference on the other. It's a 50%. Who cares what that dollar amount was? It's a percentage.
So the fees that are already paid are vested, but any fee that has not been paid will not be vested. If you set the date at August 1st, on July 31st, if the guy walks through the door and pulls the building permit, he pays the lower fee. The next day, he pays the upper fee.
How does that, though, what's the effective of the law that just changed? When's that effective? Linda, do you know? When is that law effective?
All I know is Bellingham is just now talking about getting their enabling ordinances put together within the coming year. So
but does anyone know? I mean, once the governor signs a bill into law, how long before it's effective? July of the next year. Okay. All right. So, not part of the argument.
My understanding is that the city, we already do have the deferment programs, and they've been popular for a minority of the developers, but that we would only need to continue to do that in perpetuity. I don't believe that it is absolutely mandating that everyone pays at the back end, but that they have the ability to if they so choose. I'm not sure if that.
I believe that is true. It's voluntary, but you know, as every city gets to it, I would. Yeah, I don't know. Councilperson Olson, and then Councilperson Mutchler.
I'm trying to get everybody to be impress upon them how much money you're going to try and give away when we're scraping in what start this in September again budgets, and we don't have anything. We have to argue about which nonprofits we're going to support because we don't have it. We're going to be in the hole again. And here is our chance to get where we're supposed to be. We're not jacking stuff up. We just had a mistake. Somebody forgot. You should already be there. This is not like something huge. You knew it was coming. You didn't bother to say anything. Well, now we're playing catch-up, and everybody's caught. So I think it would be... What did you say, August 1st or September? And realize we have a motion on the floor, but I'm not going to support that.
Councilperson Mutchler.
Thank you. I don't think traffic impact fees would help the nonprofits. I think that is a separate part of the budget. And I was just trying to calculate what kind of money. I can't collect what we didn't collect. We can't. That's lost. It's gone. I'm sorry about that. It's our mistake. It's our mistake that we made. But going forward, I was just thinking what we're going to be leaving on the table if we go... what Councilmember Goodrich is suggesting. I'm using the typical number we use around 100 homes a year. I realize it's more or less, but 100 is the number of homes we see built and turned up. 100 homes, we're leaving half of this impact fee on the table, this increase, which is $225, which is about $23,000 additional that we're not receiving. I wish we weren't doing that. Wish we weren't not didn't have that. Wish we could have that money. But I'm with that Councilmember Goodrich. I don't like to see the big jumps, and I think that's what we're talking about here is $23,000 roughly. So I'd like to speak in favor of the motion that we would support it. It gets us there in a year.
Further discussion or comment? Okay, to make it clear, do we need to restate the motion or you know where we're at?
We're just voting on the amendment, correct? Not
correct.
There's no amendment.
There's no amendment.
Oh, so
no,
it was,
no.
So yeah. Amended it.
No.
No.
The, I stated it clearly.
Stated it before the second.
So you want to restate the original motion?
Okay. So that does complicate things. We'll see what the vote turns out.
Councilmember Goodrich moved to increase the impact fees incrementally over a 2-year period.
Okay, so that is the motion before you. Any further
it's less
questions?
Than 2 years, though. Wouldn't the first bump happen quickly here in August?
As proposed, the first bump would happen in August, another one in 16.
So we're looking at 12 months. It's 14 months.
That wasn't the motion. That's what he's saying, something different than what he said.
Brent, what was your intention?
My intention is what Yori just stated, that we do the one bump this year.
In August.
Yeah, and then the next bump would be next year.
14 months.
Okay.
Roll call.
Clerk, are you up to speed so the minutes are correct? You are?
Yes.
Okay. So everyone understand the motion before you.
Roll call.
Roll call. Sure. Okay. So roll call vote before you.
I do have a question then. If we do not approve this motion, we will have to revisit the issue because...
We will.
We could revisit it.
Correct.
Tonight.
Okay, yes. That's my
yeah, you have to leave with some action.
Yes, we have to have some action. Okay.
Yeah.
Do we?
Yes, we do.
Do we?
Well,
you're right. Yeah.
Okay. Stay status quo.
We can have the compliance.
And so that makes another motion.
Okay,
you have the motion before you.
Yes.
Roll call vote. Councilperson Watson.
No.
Councilperson Hansen.
No.
Councilperson Olson.
No.
Councilperson Ingram?
No.
Councilperson Mutchler?
Yes.
Councilperson Birch?
No.
Councilperson Goodrich?
Yes.
Okay. The motion fails with 2 yeses, Councilperson Mutchler and Goodrich. Okay. Councilperson Hansen?
I'd like to move that we increase the traffic impact fees by the appropriate amount on August 1st as first proposed, the amount that, of the shortfall that should have been collected in the first place.
Second. Well, you should state that then.
There is the other amendment of waiting until 2016 for the CCI. It would appear that the motion would essentially be following staff recommendation in the ordinance to make the immediate changes to the residential and then waiting until 2016 for the CCI updates.
Yes.
Okay, and that was motion by Councilperson Hansen and seconded by Councilperson Olson. Further discussion.
Approve the ordinance as presented by staff.
Correct. Further discussion. Okay, we'll go back to roll call vote. Councilperson Watson?
Yes.
Councilperson Hansen?
Yes.
Councilperson Olson?
Yes.
Councilperson Ingram?
Yes.
Councilperson Mutchler?
No.
Councilperson Birch?
Yes.
Councilperson Goodrich?
Nope.
Okay, the motion carries.
Thank you, Council, and I do apologize for that oversight.
Okay. Moving on to mayor reports. So, mayor reports, I like to do good things. We got a copy of a certificate mailed to us. Maybe, hopefully, they got the certificate of the person that earned it. But this is the AWC Certificate of Municipal Leadership. The Association of Washington Cities recognized Councilmember Kathy Watson, City of Ferndale, for the successful completion of the AWC Certificate of Municipal Leadership Training Program presented 5/29/2015 and signed by Francis Benjamin, AWC President. So congratulations to Council. So in discussing AWC, so we had a request. Certainly your treasurer wanted to stay out of it. Your mayor wanted to stay out of it and wanted to just let you work it all yourself between council, but that isn't working out. So you have approximately that $1,800 in your travel training budget for the entire year of 2015. We have spent zero funds on council training budget. You haven't requested it, and that's great. If you divided $1,800 by 7, it's $257.14 each. Councilperson Munstra has a request for $850. That would leave you a balance of $950 to attend the AWC conference in Wenatchee, and I believe some of you are already attending and going. So we're looking now. It's you're on the line. We're looking for council direction. Your treasurer would like to know how you're going to do this. Councilperson Birch.
Is anybody else besides Councilmember Mutchler requesting funds out of the travel allotment?
Not at this time.
Not at this time.
I'm going to the conference, but I pay my own way.
Councilperson Olson, you look like you have a comment.
I think what you just said was the fairest thing. Each person is entitled to 257 what?
257.14 is the division.
There you go. That would be the most fair thing.
It probably, I mean, it should be in some sort of a motion if you're going to make that.
I'm making a motion that we allow the training funds to be used at the rate of
257.14
per person. And if somebody says they're not going to use them, if they want to donate it, I guess, to whoever wants extra, then so be it.
So we would allocate it evenly by 7 each year, and if other people wanted to give up theirs, they could, and that would be an interaction between council members.
Yeah. Does that give you any heartache, Mark?
But that works.
Okay.
It's kind of, we probably should have had this direction before.
Who's giving it up?
It'd
be like Evan Lee. If you had extra Lee, you could donate.
Yeah, I like that. Okay, I have a motion. Do I have a second for that?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, okay, you had a second? Further discussion? Okay, all in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries 7-0. So, it's up to you to work it out. The other one is, I'd like to bring Mark Reimers up to the podium, please.
There's nowhere to hide.
That would be you.
We're only going to have authority over here for you a little bit of time. This is the thing where, you know, you're always calling us up and grilling us and asking us questions, and so we get to go around this and go, so can you tell us a little about your future, sir? To the microphone, please.
Yeah, all right. I want to be able to hear you. Don't mumble.
No pressure.
All right. In a couple of days, I will no longer be the editor of the Ferndale Record. It's been a sincere pleasure. I'd just like to express my appreciation and... you guys have always treated me really well, and let me do my job with a great amount of freedom, especially city staff. You guys have been really receptive, and it's really actually been fun to see what you guys do. For myself, I will be taking a position over at Spring Creek Retirement Assisted Living in Bellingham. I'll be doing some sales and marketing for them. And I guess for now, I'm no longer a journalist. I'm a recovering journalist. I'm going to call myself that for now.
I don't think you ever get over it.
Well, let's just, you know, we've never done this, but let's just have a little fun here. We're going to go around this. We're going to go around the circle here, and Council, I'm going to let you speak to Mr. Reimers here individually. So, Councilperson Watson, can I even say to the guy?
You were always very fair, and I appreciate that. You did your research. You did a good job of presenting both sides, and you always knew what you were talking about when you did your stories, and I appreciated that. I appreciated the thoroughness of your stories.
Thanks,
even if I didn't like the comment.
Councilperson Hansen.
Well, I have always appreciated the fact that Mark would listen to almost any scruple story that we wanted to present to him, and somehow or other he would manage to get those little screwball announcements in the paper. Obviously nothing that was inappropriate, but you know, sometimes what's important to one person is not important to another, and I think Mark was very sensitive to that.
Councilperson Olson.
I just appreciated him always trying to get a hold of you if it was something that, you know, you were involved in so that he could get your side of the story into it. That isn't always done.
Councilperson Ingram.
And that's what I always liked about Mark. He, if there was a story that involved myself personally, Mark was always on the phone with me saying, give me your opinion here, give me your side of it. And Councilman Olson's right, that's not commonly done with the news media, because I've had a lot of experience with others that didn't do that.
Councilperson Mutzler.
The first question is, rhymers or reamers?
Rhymers.
Oh, there you go.
Because I've been doing the good, I've been doing it right. Mark, you're a really classy and fine gentleman in what you do, and you'll just succeed in whatever you do, and you spent your time all here in Glendale. You made a difference. Come back and visit us.
Councilperson Burr.
Well, you always made me sparkle, and no matter what article you printed about me, you always made me look really, really good. I appreciate that.
Councilperson Goodrich.
I don't know what I can really add to what everybody else is. Sometimes I feel bad to being last because things get said or whatever. But
you
just
start with
it. I'm going to reverse that next time.
Yeah.
Next time we roast somebody.
Yeah. This wish you the best of luck on your new endeavor, and you will be missed in the audience.
And like a lot of subjects, you know, we have people from the audience who would like to comment. Yes, would anyone like the audience like to comment?
Yes, I would.
Okay.
Buzzer, please. 3 minutes.
3 minutes.
Do I need to give my name and address?
Yes.
No. Yes. or be quiet.
I've known Mark for quite a few years now because when I was in Linden, to your surprise, I'm sure, I was very active politically and wrote many letters to the editor and got to know him. He is a gentleman. I've never known Mark one single time to do or say anything to which I found either offensive, unprofessional, unnecessary. I have a high respect for this man, and I, too, as a citizen of this community, will truly miss him as I see a totally fair and objective individual who's done a superb job in his position.
Mark, do they have anyone hired yet? I mean, are we going to have someone covering us? Or what? Because we had there was a lot of time between you and Megan.
We'll still be around. Okay. Brent Lindquist, he's covered for me before. We'll get somebody here, and at some point, at the moment there's not a new person hired, but he's going to be covering the position, and I'm confident Brent's going to do a really good job. So
is it still news at Ferndale Record? Just for all
absolutely,
the too?
Everything's pretty generic on my business card. So
okay.
So before you leave, from the city of Ferndale, we all love you and we thank you very much. So great job. You'll always be a golden eagle, you know.
He's only going to Bellingham.
I know, he's going to come back. He'll probably move here someday. Yeah, there you go. There's an opening for a blog.
There's a URL
available. Had to get that in. Okay, council reports. Anything to report? Councilperson Birch.
If anybody has not received enough information on the UGA, Yori is going to present to the Heritage Society on the 30th of this month at 7 o'clock p.m. P.M. The Heritage Society. And again, he's going to have a presentation for the Kiwanis on July the 7th. And the Ferndale Public Market opened on the 7th of June. We're still in June. And again yesterday, so we've had 2 weeks and it's really, really been going well. And Ferndale neighbors really seem to enjoy it being on a Sunday afternoon. And we expect another food truck next week. It's either going to be Thai or it's a soup kitchen. The Mexican food restaurant truck was there yesterday and they did really well. And the music was well received. And the first week we had 150 to 175 people attend. And yesterday it was about 75 people. So it's really encouraging.
Good job. Thank you. Any other council reports? No? Okay, moving to staff. Finance director?
Nothing.
Public works / city administrator?
Nothing.
Community development director?
That was our announcement, so we're good.
Well, by then you should have this whole, the UGA thing should be perfect because you're going to practice so many times. Or you'll be completely. completely bored of it by then. City Clerk's Office?
Just real quickly, I spent last week at the Northwest Clerk's Institute in Tacoma. It's a partnership of Washington State University, but it's housed at University of Puget Sound, so kind of weird. But I'm really appreciative of administration and council's support of continuing education because it's so valuable. And it was a really, really great week. I learned a lot.
I always ask my people when they go to seminars to come back and tell me one thing they learned.
I learned don't be gone for a week and come back on Friday night and try to throw the agenda together.
Okay, there we go.
Lesson learned. But I also learned that Yori...
Well, I'm glad it took you a whole week to learn that.
Yori never goes away from work, truly, because he was able to help me at about 7 o'clock on Friday night and emailed me some very crucial information. So.
From a campsite.
From his campsite.
Way to go, Yori. Hope you didn't get any s'mores on your phone. Public Information Officer.
I'm working on the public participation plan for Ferndale 2036, and it's really exciting because we've got branding and all sorts of fun stuff, so you'll be seeing that probably in the next couple weeks.
Great. I can't ask for police because he's not here.
He's at Great Wolf Lodge with his grandson.
Yeah. Well, good for him. Okay, so pursuant to RCW 42.30.110F, we will now enter executive session to receive and evaluate complaints or charges brought against a public officer or employee. The session will last 30 minutes. No action will be taken after the session.